And welcome back. In the midst of hectic holiday activity, thinking about taxes is probably taking a back seat to everything else going on. But this is also a time to consider tax moves to take before the end of the year to take full advantage of tax law and minimize the April 15th tax bite as much as possible. In studio to help us in this regard is Lance Weiss, CPA and partner with the tax and accounting firm SFW Partners. Lance, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Hope you had a great holiday season.
I did. Thank you.
Now it's back to work.
Yes, it is. We'll be coming up on another busy season here before too much longer.
That's right. Well, we only have a couple of days left, obviously, to
I said earlier, get
our ducks in a row. And I'm saying that because of the weather we've been having recently, obviously.
Yeah, it is good weather for ducks, but that is about the only thing it's good weather for.
That's true. What are some of the key areas, Lance, that people should be thinking about?
Well, you know, Don, as you said, there are just a few more days here before we can, you know, before it's too late to do some steps to try to minimize some taxes. And really, at this point, we're down to some of those last-minute charitable donations is always a good idea. There's a real good website out there that the Salvation Army maintains. It's satruck.org. And they have a real good donation value guide for those items of clothing and items of furniture and children's toys and things like that as we, you know, make room in the house for all the new gifts and clean out all, you know, some of the older things that have been there. A common question I get is, well, how much are these, you know, old clothes worth? How much is a dining room set worth? And the satruck.org website has some pretty good guidelines regarding what, you know, what the condition of the property might be in and then the value that you can go ahead and take on your tax return. One thing I would advise in addition to having that sort of documentation might even be pictures so that you can show the agent, if you're ever asked to, that, well, look, this dining room set was in great condition, so I picked the high value instead of, you know, it's made of particle board or something where it might not be. They can't tell without pictures.
Sure. Well, that's some real good advice, and that's easy enough to do today because it seems like everybody's got a telephone and every telephone has a camera.
Everybody has a camera. That's exactly right.
That shouldn't be much of a problem. It seems to me when we talked in past years, Lance, some of the things that have come up have been issues of certain things you can do with regard to payments that you can make that will help you out a little bit. Obviously, you have to pay property taxes before the
sure,
end of the
year.
Sure,
yeah. The real estate tax, the personal property tax, all of that should be paid before the end of the calendar year. But, Don, you know, something else that comes up are the for those taxpayers who are on quarterly tax payment regimes where they get the four vouchers and they pay it in quarterly. Well, that Missouri voucher is due on January the 15th of 16 for the fourth quarter. But if you want to deduct that on your 2015 tax return, well, that's a payment that you want to get in the mail, you know, sometime yet this week.
That's and that there's no problem with that. There's no law against paying it early.
As long as you get it in the mail before the end of the year, then you can deduct it on your 2015 tax return.
I also seem to recall you're mentioning in past years that if you pay your January mortgage payment earlier, that it's a little bit of a help.
Yeah, you know, it can be. But items like that, you're just going to push off the benefit of one tax year. And the other hard part about trying to do that is you have to try to match up what that 1098 will say from the mortgage company. So even at this point, mailing it at this date, they're not going to get it till January. And will they get that 1098 correct? And, you know, you can disagree with the information that comes out on the 1098, but you better have some pretty good documentation to show that your number is the correct one.
There was some legislation signed in Washington recently which included some tax breaks. I'm not sure what they are. I'm sure you are sure of what they are. What are they and are the things we can take advantage of now?
You know, there were hundreds of tax breaks and tax extenders in the bill that they call the Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act of 2015. So they're calling it the PATH Act of 2015. And there were some good items in there. One of the things that I like to do with a fair number of our clients, if they're eligible, is that once you turn 70 and a half, you have to take out a required minimum distribution from your IRAs and retirement accounts. Well, what the Act allows you to do now on a permanent basis, rather than being one of those items that they would extend at the end of the year for one more year, and we never knew really what the rules would be until we got to sometime in December, is that now you can tell the custodian of your retirement account to make that payment directly to the charity. And who this really benefits are two different categories of taxpayers. There are a whole lot of people out there who have their retirement plan distributions, increase their income to the point where now more of their Social Security is subject to income tax. Well, if you direct the custodian of your IRA to make that payment directly to the charity, then that income's not included in your adjusted gross income. So it can cause less of your Social Security benefit to be subject to income tax. So it's a great benefit for a lot of those taxpayers in that $50,000 and below level. And chances are those taxpayers aren't itemizing anyway. So if they're going to make a $1,000 or a couple of $1,000 donation here at the end of the year, because they don't itemize, there's no benefit on their tax return. But now they can make that payment directly from their IRA, not have that income subject to tax, and come out way ahead. So it's a great benefit for those taxpayers.
Anything you can do with a 401k?
Well, you know, similar set of rules. Once you turn 70 and a half, sure, you have to take, you know, you have to begin taking some required minimum distributions, unless you still work for the company. But a lot of people turn, you know, whatever retirement age might be for them, and they leave that money in the plan. Well, that's another topic for another day. Is that the best place to leave it, or should they put it in their own rollover IRA investment? And you know, that's for the investment advisors to work through.
I want to invite listeners into this conversation. If you have questions concerning tax issues, and particularly questions relating to what you might or should do before the end of the year to save a little money, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. We have an email here from John in Webster Groves relative to the kinds of things we were just talking about, Lance. He says, my retired friends tell me that I should be paying state income taxes on my federal retirement annuity. I have done so for the past 2 years. I used the federal short form and, I believe, the Missouri standard form. What am I doing wrong? What form should I be using?
Well, it sounds like he's doing it correctly. If he's a resident of Missouri, you need to pay Missouri income tax on this. You want to be sure to work through all of the MO-A form to make sure that to the extent any of that income and your it can be excluded and your federal income taxes get deducted. So I would suggest him also working through the MO-A form, and it might give him some relief on that.
How do you keep all these forms at the top of your head? There are so darn many of
them.
Well,
I was talking with the producer before I came on, and I think we figured out this is probably my 18th year being on the air. So I don't know, Don. I guess I need a better hobby.
We're going to keep doing it, Lance, until you get it right, or until I get it right, one way or the other.
Well, fortunately, they keep changing the laws for us every year. But, you know, at some point, Don, the tax law does need to get a major rewrite. I mean, when I started in the business, the very first year I was out, we had the Internal Revenue Code of 1954. Mm-hmm. And then in 86, we got the new Internal Revenue Code of 1986, and we're still working with that base code. So it seems like every 30 years or so, we're due for a major rewrite. And, you know, we need some simplification because these rules, they are just getting crazy out there.
Well, it keeps coming up during the political campaigns, and it's doing that. It's up once again this time. But talk is cheap when it comes to running for political office. They talk about it, then nothing happens.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it generally takes the first year or 2 years during some president's second term. Because if you try to do it during a first term, you're never going to get reelected. You'll make too many people mad. So we could be, you know, 5-6 years away from a major rewrite.
That's why I'm for a 1-6-year term presidency.
We could spend all day talking about that.
Yeah, but nobody listens to me. Let's take a call. David joins us from St. Charles. He wants to bring up a subject I'm interested in. Go ahead, David. You're on the air.
Well, I've got a two-part question. One is, I heard you say that donations, if you're under $50,000, don't mean anything if you don't itemize. And I usually get my parents' National Resources Defense Council donation, so I want to see if that's not worth it. Then the next question is on Obamacare, which I realized on the website it is called that. I thought it was just called the American Health Care Act. But the fees for that will be more than if I would just take a COBRA plan from my recent job until I get the new job that I'm working on. Is that possible that it actually costs more to go through the healthcare system than to get a COBRA system? Thanks.
Okay, so a couple of topics there. The first one, so, you know, I kind of made a generalization there that someone with $50,000 in income might not be itemizing, and that's certainly not the definition. It's not the rule. But with as high as the standard deduction is now at $6,000 plus another $1,500 roughly if you're over 65 and blind and so on and so forth. Many taxpayers that are older taking those required minimum distributions were the context I was talking about that in, might not be itemizing. So certainly it's a taxpayer by taxpayer analysis. You have to look at what their real estate taxes are and state income taxes and other charitable donations, any mortgage interest. And to the extent that number is over the standard deduction amount, you certainly want to itemize. You will always come out ahead in that regard. But that's a per taxpayer analysis.
What, is there a general rule of thumb with regard to whether to itemize or not?
Well, generally you want to itemize if your amount is going to be over the standard deduction amount. And those standard deduction levels, if you're on a married filing joint return, are $12,600 for next year. So even if you have a $100,000 mortgage still, that might only be $3,000 or $4,000 of interest depending on your rate. So, you know, there not as many people itemize as they used to because every year that standard deduction amount has gone up by a pretty healthy inflation rate.
Are there any end-of-year considerations for couples who have divorced during the year?
Yeah, there certainly are, and that's one where you want to make sure that the divorce decree properly states what alimony is and how much is the alimony portion of whatever monthly payment somebody might be making. And the IRS has had some recent victories in the tax court on defining what alimony is. For example, if the divorce decree says that one of the spouses will receive $2,500 a month for the next 10 years, and if that person dies in year 8, then there's a lump sum payment of whatever is left. Well, if any form of those payments continue after the death of the payor, then it's not alimony. So you want to be sure, first of all, that the amount you're taking as alimony qualifies as such, and the IRS has been winning that argument in court.
Right. We missed the second part of David's
second
question.
Second part of the question.
He's talking about Obamacare.
Yeah, so the Affordable Care Act or the American Health Care Act or so many different names are out there for it. But the question was, is it possible that the coverage that he would get from healthcare.gov or maybe from an agent could be more expensive than what a COBRA payment might be? And it is possible. It'll depend on the plan that you're looking for or looking at on healthcare.gov. Certainly if it's one of the very rich plans with a low deductible, that premium might be more than what a COBRA payment could be depending on the insurance that the company offers.
I'm reminding our audience that we're talking with Lance Weiss, a CPA and partner with the tax and accounting firm of SW Partners, Inc., and we're soliciting your phone calls if you'd like to get into this conversation with tax questions, particularly with regard to end-of-the-year considerations. Give us a call at 382-8255. Lance, is there let me put it this way. Potentially, what is the most costly loss that a person can take by not taking action before the end of the year? Does that make sense to you?
Well, so some of the mistakes that a person might make here before the end of the year, Don, some of the best deductions that are out there are still the retirement plan and the IRA deductions. Well, the IRA deduction, you can go ahead and put money in there, and if you're eligible, go ahead and deduct that up until April 15th. So you could make a contribution in late March or April and still get a deduction on your 2015 tax return. At this point, so late in December, it's really too late to affect the amount that you can put into your 401k. But if you are getting a year-end bonus, maybe this week, and you still have time to direct the payroll or HR department that, hey, I want to take, $5,000 of that bonus and put it in my 401k. Well, those 401k deferrals have to happen during the calendar year. So that's one that, if there is still time in this last week that maybe somebody could take advantage of.
What about deferring income? If you're going to get that bonus, say, hey, give it to me January 1, not December 30.
And that's certainly another conversation that you can have. So if you have that conversation with your employer and you say, hey, that Christmas bonus, pay that to me in January, then, yeah, it won't be subject to income tax in calendar 15, but certainly will be in 16. So, again, it's just pushing the benefit from one year to the next. And not so much the permanent savings aspect that, say, the charitable contributions are. I mean, that's a deduction that you take that you know, you get full benefit for.
And by the same token, the employer wants to pay you in this year because it's a write-off for him or her.
Well, you know, on the business side, though, that depends, because there's really a pretty common situation where the employer can deduct that amount, even though it's accrued but not paid. So for many clients, they go ahead and declare that Christmas bonus. They say, we're going to give this to you on January 5th. They deduct it on their 15 tax returns. And then the employees pick it up on the 16 tax returns.
All right. We have another call or two. Let's take them as time will allow. We'll begin with Rosalind calling from St. Louis. Rosalind, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Lance Weiss.
Yes, hi. I would like to ask about a charitable religious trust donation. I was quick claimed a piece of property some years back when I was married to my husband, and now he and I are separated. But he would like for me to donate that property back to him under a charitable religious trust. And we are separated. So I'd like to know, how is that going to benefit or harm me for this 2015 year, because the property taxes are due on it as we speak?
Okay. So the donation is probably going to – it is a CRT, but the R typically stands for remainder trust. So it 'd be a charitable remainder trust that the donation is going to. And the deduction that is afforded to someone when they make a donation to a charitable remainder trust will depend on the amount of the payment that will come forth from that trust until the remainder actually goes to the charity. So there's a lot of math to work on that, and perhaps the better conversation to have, or maybe the additional conversation to have, would be, what are the other terms of the charitable remainder trust? Because typically, Don, the way we see these CRTs get set up is maybe one of the, you know, the big athletes, or, you know, one of these guys in town who might have a couple of $1 million payment come to them. They'll take a large – they'll take a portion of that payment, put it in a charitable remainder trust, and then the charity will get that payment. And say 20 years, they'll get whatever's left. But during that 20-year period, there's a payment that comes to the donor, so that maybe they get a 2, 3, 4, 5% per year payment on that dollar amount, and then it's the remainder that goes to the charity. So I think the better question to ask would be, can I see a copy of the CRT that's getting the deduction, and will you also be sharing in the payment that comes from the CRT?
You're absolutely right. The tax code does have to be simplified. Well, what is a quit claim?
So the quit claim deed, that's a better question for an attorney, because it does deal with property rights in Missouri. And the quit claim deed is just one of the many ways that property can be transferred between individuals typically.
All right. Let's take another call. We'll be joined by Roland calling from St. Louis. Roland, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Nice to hear from you. I wanted to mention that we have been retired. We are on Medicare A and B and so forth and D, and also another thing. And we had for a prescription insurance coverage a Cigna. Cigna has been bought by Anthem. And suddenly, beginning in 2016, Cigna has raised the cost of insurance coverage more than doubled, and now will charge $250 even before you get any coverage, in beginning in 2016. It is, in my view, criminal moving. You know. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, the healthcare costs do continue to rise. Now, there is a deduction that's available to those who itemize for all of their healthcare costs. It's one of the many different possible itemized deductions that are out there. So maybe you'll get a benefit for some of that increased cost. But, yeah, certainly that is a big increase.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that people, the whole nation should understand that, what's happened. Okay.
Thank you, Roland. Thanks for the call. We'll take another one. Gary joins us from St. Louis. Gary, go ahead. You're on the air with Lance Weiss.
Oh, thank you very much. I have a question regarding changing a traditional IRA, $7,000, into a Roth IRA. I have a loss carry forward of $7,000, which I can apply to offset the income. I also receive a subsidy from Obamacare. I'm wondering if that will have any effect on my Obamacare subsidy.
Well, so the best answer to that would require knowing everything else that hits your tax return as well, because it is the amount of income in what's called the tax household that will impact how much of that advance premium payment you might have to pay back. There's a form 8962 that you might want to work through. If you can get a draft of that, that'll walk you through the math of was the advanced premium credit the correct number, or were maybe they offsetting too much of the monthly premium? But you know, my guess would be that the NOL and the Roth conversion, when you net those two together, you'll be better off than if you did the Roth conversion or the conversion to the Roth without having that NOL. So I don't have all those tables certainly committed to memory, but I think if you work through the 8962, it should come down to the right answer.
8962. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the call. We had a caller who couldn't stay with us, but the question is, the caller wanted to ask about the tax implications of having a first baby. Now, the way the question is phrased here, what does that mean for tax liability? I don't think there's much of a liability there. It's a tax deduction, isn't it?
It should be. And, you know, congratulations on that. It's always an exciting time. And there are a couple of good tax benefits that are out there for kids. The first one, of course, is the exemption amount, which I think is up to $4,000 per exemption now on your tax forms. There's also a child credit, which is a $1,000 credit for every year that you have that you have kids that are under age 17. It's $1,000 per child, and actually part of that credit also increases and is refundable to the extent that your income is on the lower side. And I can't recall where that breakout is, but you know, Don, the other thing that's out there is the earned income credit. And once you have some kids, you move up a notch on that table. So if your income's under somewhere around $40,000-$45,000, you can get an enhanced child credit, which actually was part of that tax act that was just signed a week or so ago.
Right. Well, none of these things you've just mentioned have to be dealt with before the end of the year. That's just part of the regular tax.
Right, part of the regular tax law. But certainly if you were trying to do the forms by hand before you had kids, you certainly want to go out and get, either do your tax return online or use some of the software where you can be sure to capture all the benefits of having kids.
You say doing it by hand. We've talked about this before, and I'm sure many people are probably considering now whether or not they should go for TurboTax or one of these new age tax services that are available online.
And, you know, I generally recommend those. Those are good products. You know, one of the things you want to make sure you do is you do everything you can to protect your identity. The identity thefts that we had during the last tax season from, 10, 11 months ago were down there. They were absolutely horrible. We had probably, I think in the St. Louis area, it was roughly 8 or 9% of the taxpayers had some form of identity theft on their tax returns.
That was incredible. It's incredible. The sophistication, not that we should be surprised at the hackers having the sophistication, but it's just remarkable what they've done.
Every year the government does a little bit more to try to protect. And one of the real good protections that's going to be out there this year will be an additional code on the W-2s if you electronically file your return. So again, another reason to go to the e-file process. Because on your W-2, and not every company, not every provider is doing this. It's largely optional for this year. But if you have a new four-digit code, certainly not part of your Social Security number, but just a code, make sure you enter that in the e-file process as well.
People should certainly be alert to the potential for identity theft, if you will. Or what they're doing is they're having the returns, the refunds, shipped to them.
We have some clients who were identified as a victim of identity theft that are still waiting for their 2015 tax returns.
They do have recourse, and they will ultimately get the money, as I understand it, but it takes time.
It takes a long time.
Yeah. We have an email here from Carol who asks, please address issues with Missouri most payments for tuition book payments.
And, that's another great deduction to take advantage of here in the last few days of the year. So the Missouri Most program is one of the college savings programs. And per taxpayer, you can contribute up to $8,000 on your return and take a Missouri deduction for that contribution into the college savings fund. And then the college fund grows tax-free as long as that money is ultimately withdrawn to pay for any of the beneficiaries' college-related expenses. So the 529 plans are wonderful programs. I think it's momost MissouriMost.org, mm-hmm. or maybe it's MissouriMost.org. I don't recall exactly the website. Certainly Google can help you find it. But that's one where the contribution, you know, in the next few days could save up to 6% on your Missouri income tax return.
Is this plan or something like it available in most states? I mean, I'm wondering about Illinois and adjoining states here.
It is. Most states have a Section 529 plan. And then actually Missouri expanded their deduction so that, you know, maybe you have a grandparent in another state that wants to donate to their state's plan but do it in your name. Missouri will give you the deduction regardless of whose state's plan that it goes in for, as long as you're classified as the grantor of the donation.
What about the grandparent who?
Well, you know, the grandparents are, you know, just being kind here and giving the money to the kids and letting them make the contribution.
While we're on this type of subject, what about the issue of gifting? This is the time of year of giving. Can you get a tax break by gifting something before year's end?
So the gift from the grandparents to the kids won't be subject to income tax. Gifts are never subject to income tax, but the reason people do the gifting at the end of the year would be to reduce their ultimate estate tax liability. And, you know, a few years ago, the estate tax exemption amount went up over $5 million per taxpayer. So estate tax planning really isn't something that most people have to worry about, because on a married filing joint estate, it takes something north of 10, and now because of indexing, almost $11 million of wealth before you're subject to the estate tax.
A lot of organizations, and we're one of them, St. Louis Public Radio and NPR and many other organizations are asking people to donate their cars as part of a donation. What are the tax implications of that?
So when the car is donated, the charity has a period of time to then sell the car and then report to the individual how much they received on the sale of the car, and then that's the amount of the donation. So if you donated the car now, it would probably be closer to the end of January before you had the form back from that organization that says, we sold your car for $2,500 and that's the amount of your deduction. And maybe the blue book on the car was $1,500, or maybe the blue book was $3,000. But you're limited on your deduction to the amount they actually received on sale.
But it's probably too late now to – or is it?
No, it's not too late. Right. So it's still something you could sign over the title and start the process. But it would be well into January before you had the actual number to report on your return.
Okay. We have to leave it at that. Lance Weiss, CPA and partner with the tax and accounting firm of SFW Partners. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm sure, before April 15th once again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lance Weiss. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the difficulties faced at Koch Elementary School in the Riverview Gardens School District and how officials there are helping children survive and learn. Then we'll talk with reporter Rachel Lippman about the past year's top St. Louis area news involving public safety, courts, and the police. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.